welcome to the 11th episode of the Frontend Greatness Podcast. I'm your host, Ari Koponen, and today we will be talking about better web typography. My guest today is Oliver Schoendorfer. Oliver is a UI designer, a typographer, who helps developers improve their websites through pimped typography. He hosts the YouTube channel Pimp My Type at pimpmytype.com and also runs a newsletter with weekly font recommendations for web and app design. Hi, Oliver, and welcome to the show.
Hey, Ari, it's so nice to be here. Thanks.
So how are you doing?
I'm good. I didn't see a lot of bad typography today because I didn't browse the web, whatever. No, I'm good. I had a lot of coffee. I have three kids, so they kept me pretty busy at night. Last night, I'm a bit overslept, but this kind of boosts my motivation here to talk about typography and how to pimp it.
Yeah, it's nice to meet people who love their passion. And I think we could start with you telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got into web typography.
Yeah, gladly. I'm from Austria and I started with this whole subject of designing and doing things or designing things. And I would call myself, as you already said, a designer, not a developer. But I'm familiar with front-end design because I started my design career, let's say, at the age of 14 by designing a Star Trek fan page. I wasn't very much into Star Trek Voyager back then. But I always misspelled it and wrote Straterk or something. And then at this time, I found out that I really love to do things on the computer, and the web always fascinated me from back then. This was the year 2000 or something, so CSS wasn't that common. We still had the font tag and marquee tag and all these nice things you can't mess around with. But eventually, I started doing some design work for some friends and family and so on, and doing first websites and impressions. And after that, when I was at the age of 19, I started to go to design school and get a formal education. And they did not focus so much on the web. It was more or less basic graphic design, not so much focused on digital media. And there, the spark for typography got lit, and I was so enthusiastic learning about typography because I kind of developed a love for the shapes of text and fonts. And it's always a bit underestimated because typography is such a hidden thing. It's not so obvious because we only tend to focus on the content, but the shape, the form always subconsciously moves us or evokes some feelings and things. And after learning about good typography, my life literally became very, very hard, as you might know. There's a nice saying, if you want to annoy somebody, teach him typography, because after that his life will be horrible, or her life. And the same went for me when I learned this one epiphany was there when I learned about how to space all caps lines. So you should, when you write something out in all caps lines, you should space them a bit, because uppercase letters are not made to be set next to uppercase letters. They're made to be set next to lowercase letters. So weird gaps are created between the individual letters. And I learned about spacing out this in CSS terms at some letter spacing. And after I knew about this, I went into the shower. It was the first semester at design school, I guess second or third month in. And then I took the shampoo bottle, looked at this bottle, and there the label, the all caps label, wasn't spaced properly. And I was so shocked in that moment. I couldn't believe it, because it was a major brand. It was done by professionals and they just didn't think about this. How could I see this? And they could not. And from that moment on, I somehow got very enthusiastic about telling other people about the value of good typography, how they could improve it, and how they also could boost their messages and their projects, since it's everywhere but often overlooked.
Yeah, I get it. Like when you design something very special that, you know, and you want a wow effect, or you're making something very classy, or you're building a brand. So that's where, you know, great typography is like a must. And it's like a huge thing. And brands, you know, they pay a lot of money for people. They design their own typefaces. They want the letters of their type to kind of represent what they are. But why should like web developers, like front-end developers, care about typography?
Yeah, that's a good question. Basically, text is still a major, it still conveys the most part of information on the web. It's not video, audio or something, but we are all familiar with that. If we really want to find something, we go for text, we browse an article, or we try to get this information quickly by using text. And as a developer, you have such a big influence on this topic, because eventually it's not just necessarily that you have a given design by somebody, you're doing a personal project, or the client doesn't have a budget for it and he says, yeah, just do the design or use a template or whatever, but you still have so much influence and you can improve so much as a developer on this side. And it's not just about performance, it's more or less just about creating the feeling and atmosphere you want to create. And if you're aware of this, it's very helpful, because many people say, yeah, I don't care, it doesn't matter, I'm using Helvetica or the just sans serif or serif, the fallback fonts on the browser. Who cares? The thing is, type is never neutral. When you look at a word and it's written in a specific typeface, you get a different atmosphere. As you already said, if you want it to be more elaborate, it might be a serif typeface. If you want to be more, let's say, modern, you could use a sans serif typeface. But to control that and to evoke the feeling and the emotions you want to evoke, you definitely might use a web font then, which also gained a lot of traction within the last years. I just took a look at the Web's Almanac. The usage of web fonts was about... It's right now it's at 81% or something. 81%.
So 81% of all the websites in the world have a custom web font.
Yeah, have a specific web font, but the question is all the websites. Yeah, about their data source, I'm not so familiar. It's from the HTTP archive, and they have some data sources there.
Sure.
I think they're connecting to.
But basically, a majority of the websites on the web use a custom web font. That makes sense. Like, we've actually been building a design system at work, and currently one of the focuses has been on copywriting, and it relates to typography in the sense that it's interesting, like when you really kind of get into detail on what it really requires for you to have like a great user experience. Even if you have all the elements are nice, the design is great, The text that you actually put in there has a lot of influence on how the UI, how you need to build the UI. You have a lot of explanation texts, you need to have them somewhere. The size, the colors of the fonts, the actual font that you use, all of those affect the UX in the UI. And it's very interesting when working with people who are, great at copywriting, to kind of see this, like how small details actually make a big difference in the user behavior and how you achieve the goals and how people feel about your product. So text is definitely a big part of the web experience. And I think it's funny, like in the same way as in the web framework world, there was or CSS framework world, like Bootstrap was a huge thing at some point. Then you had Font Awesome was the icon set.
Yeah.
And then you had Open Sans, I guess, at least at some point, like every page is Open Sans. I think you even have like a nice YouTube video where you hate on Open Sans. But it's fun. People should go and look at that. I found it funny, like, and informative. And I think now it's interesting to see Tailwind is quite popular, and they use a lot of Inter, which is it's a super nice font designed by Rasmus. RMS, on Twitter. RMS, I don't even... Rasmus Anderson, maybe?
It's Rasmus something. Anderson, I think. But I'm not sure.
I'll put it in the show notes. In any case, it's interesting to see how quickly people adapt these great fonts, but then when the adaption goes above a different a specific level, then it starts to feel like it's so generic. The same thing with Font Awesome. At some point, you could, the user icon or login icon or something, that you could see it on every web page, that's how it felt. And that doesn't make your product feel so great anymore. It makes it feel generic. So that's something that you should really avoid. So how do you then, you know, choose a great font, or, you know, how do you go about it? How do you make your web typography better?
Yeah, the thing with the font selection, that's you summed it up perfectly. With Open Sans and Roboto or Lato or Font Awesome even, this also is an iconography, or these are glyphs, and you see that they are similar or familiar at least. This always has a big advantage. So San Francisco, Roboto, Lato, or the system default Segue UI, these all are not bad typefaces per se. They are well crafted, they are well thought through. They are also inter. They are optimized for screen display. So they are good, basically. And I'm not, I don't want to say I'm hating on Open Sans and all that. I just hate that they're everywhere and you're not thinking about if you want to belong to that gang or if you don't want to belong to that gang. So, and just to distinguish it. And as you already said, when I'm taking a look at my web design or my app or whatever, what remains that can distinguish me from the competition or from the others except color on a phone? Or a bit layout, but not a lot. So all these things, the space or the freedom of graphic design I have on a desktop page, I don't have it on a mobile phone anymore. It's mostly one column. It's basically color and text, at least for an article, and images, of course, and so on. But the thing that always repeats and repeats is the text. Also in an app design or web app design, you have your labels, your info text and whatever. All these things are very distinct, and definitely it makes sense to fit into the design or into the guidelines that iOS and Android provide. You don't want to reinvent the tab bar. You shouldn't, I guess, since this is a user convention and you want it to be... We all know these shitty apps that have different navigations because they want to be cross-platform or whatever, but they don't feel like an app. So you want these components to be the same, but you always could distinguish with the typography. And to pick a proper font now, yeah, this is a challenge for beginners, the greatest challenge. And one challenge is just to understand, or one approach is just to understand that there are three different kinds of texts, basically. There are display texts, which are larger, shorter texts for headings and introduction texts, maybe. Something you would set above 24 pixels or points or whatever, but something that's short and large, headings, titles, something that should draw you in. You see this before you read it, you could say. So these are display texts. Then there are body texts, which are, for body texts, long reading texts on a blog or on a news website or something, where you really want to have long copy. And then the third category would be functional text, which is anything else, to be fair. But it also is this tiny text you find in the labels of the tab bar in iOS. I think it's 11 pixels or something. Or you find in your navigational elements, in your notifications or somewhere, where you have to put in very specific short text in a user interface. So these three kinds of text there are. And then when you can find out for what kind of application am I designing? Am I designing mainly for a long reading experience? Then I would start picking a good typeface for that. And for this body text, to start with the body text, many people say Sans is better or Serif is better, but that's not exactly the case, since both work fine if the letter shapes are distinguishable. What does this mean? This means that you don't want to have a very geometric typeface like Futura. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, where the construction of the typeface is very minimalistic. If you imagine a lowercase a, then it just would be a circle and on one side a vertical line. And if you imagine a lowercase q, it would be a circle and a longer line on the right side. And if you imagine a lowercase g, it would be a circle and then a longer line with a band down there. So
and these shapes are all... would be a perfect circle. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Not perfect because it's optical corrected, but whatever. But just to get the feeling, they are very similar, these letters. And this means compared to, this is called a two-story G or two-story A, which is an A with a small circle and then you have a bow on the top side. Or if you have a two-story G which has a loop below on the lower part, if you have these kinds of letters, they create more distinct letter shapes if you combine them. So the word shapes get more distinct. And if these word shapes are more distinct, it's easier to read because we don't read letter by letter. We recognize word shapes. And there's a handy test you could make. It's the IL1AG test. It's a nice name.
I'll write it in the show notes.
Yeah, it's uppercase I, lowercase L, the figure one, and lowercase A, lowercase G. If these letter shapes are pretty, are not the same. So, for example, if you imagine Gill Sans, a lot of people know Gill Sans as a default typeface. The shape for the one, the uppercase I, and the lowercase L is always a vertical line. Always. It's just slightly higher or lower, and this is hard to distinguish for long reading text. It's not unreadable, definitely not, but once you see it, it might, in a functional text, it might be confusing, because if you really have to, maybe for a password generator or something like this, you really have to distinguish, is this an O or a zero or something, if it's not displayed as a slash zero or something. So to make things distinguishable is helpful for body text and also functional text.
Okay, and but then on the headings, like this sort of
headings, yeah,
that can be fine.
That can be fine. You can go a bit crazy on the headings. There, you can put for your body text and your functional text, pick something that's understated, that's not looking very interesting, I'd say, for somebody that's not a type nerd. To me, it will look interesting, and I promise you that. But to anybody else, pick something that they just don't care about. If they look at it, you should care about it, but they should not. You shouldn't say, wow, that's a cool S, or that's a cool V. Wow, this looks so cool. If you see this, it's an indicator that this might be a good display font, because there things can stand out, because they some kind of create an image of a word or an atmosphere, but for the body text, they should blend in. They should not stand out. So for your body text, you can use this category on Google Fonts, where you just use this display font, which just means crazy font or interesting font or something that fits the theme or topic of your project. There you can go wild, but when you pick a typeface for your body text, go take something, understated.
That's like a combination that I often see is like that the heading is a web font, and then in order to save bandwidth and stuff like that, the body text is actually some system font. Like at some point, I think Georgia was very popular, especially in newsletters. Like because it was available on so many computers, and like all these system fonts that you listed, I think most of them are like very like distinct when you read them. So in that sense, like that might be a decent combination if you're trying to optimize on you know the custom web fonts that you're loading. And I think that kind of takes us to the next question. That is kind of like, what are some of the technical things you need to consider when improving typography on the net? So you need to consider these three categories of, you know, different types of text that you have in the UI. But then when you select the fonts, are there some technical things that you should then take into consideration when you use them? Or how can you kind of improve that?
Yeah. So a font stack is always or is still very important. As you said, Georgia was a great typeface by Matthew Carter. He's a brilliant designer. And he gave us this present of Georgia because it's very readable, it's very sturdy, and it's still a great, great typeface. The problem with it now is, since we are on a mobile-first world now, the majority of people use Android, of course, and it's not installed there. Nothing is installed there.
I actually didn't realize that. I think that actually probably has led to it not being used so much anymore. Because when we were in a desktop world, it was very popular.
Yeah, it was. And if you have this, I think it's Font Family IO or something by Zach Leatherman. He's also a wizard on this performance thing, where I'm definitely not, and not interested in the details there, but he is. And if you take a look there, you can find out what typefaces, where it's available and what's the fallback. And on Android, it's Noto Serif, which is similar but not the same, and it might be interesting for reflow and other things. And this font stack is pretty interesting, because I had a situation once where I consulted the city of Vienna for the public website on their type choice, because they ran into a problem. And this problem was related to the font stack, because people on an iOS device, everybody saw GILSANS, and the client said, okay, we have a problem. Everybody complains about the tiny type size on their iOS devices, but on Android it looks fine. And the problem was that the font stack had Lucida on before GILSANS and then Sans Serif or whatever. And this was the order of the fonts in the font stack. And GILSANS was never displayed on macOS, because it had Lucida. But Lucida is not installed on iOS, so it used GILSANS, and GILSANS has a different X height and looks smaller than Helvetica or whatever. And so they just had to remove GILSANS from the font stack to show Helvetica, which isn't ideal. Yeah, it's not. It's Helvetica with two L, but it's definitely better than GILSANS for body text. And so to think about your font stack is always beneficial, and to build these things up to be as robust as possible. And on Android, for example, if you're using Sans Serif, you will get their Roboto, or Noto as it is now, but it's similar. So you cannot say Roboto there. This is also something people often do wrong when they put in the font stack the name of the local installer of the web font. It won't display Roboto then. You have to use Sans Serif, because this is the fallback then. There are not a lot of pre-installed fonts on Android anyways. So on iOS devices, you find more of them. So this is one common mistake.
Yeah. So basically, are there any combinations of kind of default fonts like that you could kind of use, and it would work on all devices, at least somewhat predictably? Let's say it's so.
No. Okay. Sorry, but no. Android messed this up, because that's basically the thing, and it's okay, because their fallback fonts are fine. It makes sense to use them in context of making the operating system more recognizable or whatever, or making it look and feel like it's part of the thing.
But if you're building a text oriented, like if let's say I'm building a blog, like could I use the default fonts for the body text? Like would there be a combination? If I would put just Serif, would it, you know, look at least closely the same on all devices?
No, it would not. Because if you use Serif, you will have in a default browser on a computer, you will have Times or Times New Roman. So this will be then the Serif typeface. But if you use Serif on a computer, on an Android device, it will fall back to Noto Serif, which is much more readable. It's more closer to Georgia. So then your font stack actually should be Georgia and then Serif. So you would have the fallback from... This would be then a smart font stack. Yeah, you could use it on your desktop devices. You would see Georgia, and on your Android devices, you would see Noto Serif, which is similar.
Okay, yeah. So that at least could work. So if anyone who wants to shave a few bits from their personal blog or project, they could then just go with Georgia and then Serif. All right. That's interesting. Like, it's interesting to hear that there is like that Android kind of caused a lot of issues with this sort of default font stacks. So that I think that's a very good thing to know. So if someone is kind of discussing this option, they should be very careful. This is a nice tool, this font family that IO. You can see the
You really have to think about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So are there other kind of these sort of things that you need to consider, or what any tips that you would give to front-end developers? Sure.
So one thing I often see is what's pretty, and this is a very emotional subject to me, so please, I have to be strong.
Sorry, it amuses me, but in a way, it's also super nice, because you're so passionate about typography. It's great. It's super great. I love to, I just love it. Like, when I joined the company that I currently work at, Supermetrics, in my introduction text, I said that I love it when I get to work with people who nerd out on something, when they just go, super crazy. I love it because it means that the person can usually give me some, very valuable, information or share with me something that, they actually are very, very experts on. So I love it. So I can see.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And this is basically the thing. You developers always love details. I know that, and this is where we can connect. And if I tell it to you in a detailed way, you will like it. So one thing that really breaks my heart, now I have to get back into the mood of a broken heart, and I see this all the time. And if this is the only thing you take away from this podcast, I'll be happy if you just stop this. And these are faux styles, like faux bolds and faux italics. And what are faux bolds and faux italics? Back then, when there was no web and we used Microsoft Word for creating documents and text, I'm sure you're familiar with that B button or that I button on the top in the type menu, where you could pick a typeface and then make a bold typeface and make an italic typeface. But the thing is, there are true bold weights and true italics. And they are not necessarily the ones that Word or, in nowadays, the browser would pick if the font file is not available. So back then, Microsoft Word did the following. They threw some fat and slack on these tiny, innocent letters and made them look like if they were bold. So they artificially bolded them. They distorted them. They took away their soul. And the same is with italics. When you italics, there are true italics and there are faux italics. Italics come from a tradition of handwriting, so the true italics, which means if you have a lowercase a and you have this two-story a, as we already talked about, where the shape is not just a circle and a vertical line to the right side, in the italic writing, it becomes that shape. Or if you have a two-story G, it also becomes a one-story G, because if it was handwriting, it just changes its shapes. And this is something not every typeface has. It's depending on the design. There are also slightly angled shapes. If you have an Arial, you won't see these changes in the shapes. But this is a designed slanted version. This is a designed version that more fits to this kind of neo-grotesque typefaces, which is the style for the sans serif. The problem is the angle will be off and weird and crazy if just the browser shifts it 11 degrees to the right, or if Word did it back then and still does it. So this is a problem. And I see this all the time because developers say, who the hell, why should I download another font file just for the italics if the browser can do it? Or I'm not sure what kind of accent I'm imitating. But
I actually think the reason is often the fact that you have to select all the typefaces currently, for example, in Google Fonts, because in the beginning of web fonts, people would select them all. You would have like huge web font files, and then Google decided that this is not okay, which is it really is not. Yeah. And what they did is that they made you choose every single weight you need style. What's the correct term? Yeah. I don't. Weight and style. Yeah. So now what happens often is that you select, like, you only know that you're going to be using, let's say, regular and bold. And then the designer throws in an bold italic or a semi-bold, which is 500 or 600, I think, depending on the font. Semi-bold something. And then you do it and I've always thought, actually, that it falls back to the closest option. Like, if I have a bold weight, which is 800, And I would wait is 700. I've always thought that it falls back to 800.
Yeah. The thing is, the browser does this and it only uses these four stylings for font weight 700, so for bold, and for font style italic. So if you have something like, it will fall back to the closest, but this artificial thing only happens when you don't have the font file selected. So to keep that in mind and to prevent the browser from these artificial styles, also situations appear like if you have, let's say, site, like a quote, the HTML element, site, C-I-T-A-E. This is user agent styling is italic or something like this. And if you don't have an italic there, the browser will say, yeah, what should I do? You didn't give me that file, but it says I have to do it in italic, and okay, I'll do it. So think about that in your CSS then, just to have these fallbacks. Or if you don't have a bold italic, what should it be if it's strong and emphasis in combination? Maybe it should become whatever, all caps. No, don't do that.
but the question, yeah. Like the detail that I'm now going into is like, if I have a regular italic font and I have a semi-bold weight 500 regular font, and then I put the weight 500, now I have text that is weight 500, let's say the strong tag is, I've styled it so that it is
okay,
500, I add italic to that, so it doesn't fall back to the 400 italic. But what it does is that it takes the weight 500 font and then it twists it a little bit and it's like, this is how it works. Okay.
Yeah, it distorts it.
Okay. So basically the very short version is that make sure that you have the font files for all the versions that you use. If you don't have them, don't use them, please.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Signed, Oliver.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Good. So anything else?
Yeah. One thing you really, to prevent this situation, that you could download all the weights you want and save on space if you download a variable font. And
This is interesting.
Yeah, this is interesting, isn't it?
Tell us more.
So I think finally variable fonts have reached adoption, finally. I did a talk, and my knowledge is from back there. I dated it up a bit, but I did a talk in 2018 when it was just the moment where it hit major browser support. And variable fonts, just very briefly, is a thing. It's a new font format, and the benefit of it is that it stores not like the static font files. Now we have to distinguish between them. So the static ones we talked about all this time now, and from now on it's variable fonts. A static font file is where the outline of a character or something is stored within the file and is rendered more or less within the file. And now on a variable font, you have one outline that can be manipulated. You basically only store the points that create this outline. They are called deltas or something. And then you can control them along different kinds of axes and how they should behave. Most common example is the weight axis. So if you think about it, you can store, and of course the design of the typeface has to support this. So, but you could basically have a typeface where you have font weight 100 to font weight 999. Or font weight 0 to font weight 999, the axis is 1000, and you could seamlessly adjust all the states in between these different weights, and the rendering happens inside the browser. So this is pretty cool, because now you can download one file and have a lot of different weights, and it's not only the weight axis, there are some registered axes, it's also font, the width, which is then font stretch, which is a horrible name because the font is not stretched, it's just, it gets wider, but within the design space, it's not like transition scale X or something like this, it's not killed or harmed in any way, it happens within the design space, and the typeface has to provide this width axis. So you could go from a very condensed, narrow typeface to a very extended, wide typeface, which could be nice if you, let's say you could slightly adjust the text on a mobile device for the headings and switch to a condensed version of it, and it's stored in within the same file. And this is pretty beneficial for performance reasons and also for design reasons. And yeah,
so how is the, you know, file size different? Like, do you have any examples?
Yeah, that's a good point. It always depends.
Like senior developer response. You should consider changing careers.
Yeah, I'm a senior developer now. No, I have an example. I looked one up from a project I recently. I'm so excited about this variable fonts because finally I used it in production, and it was always a bit cumbersome because you always see these variable fonts in use cases like shiny things where you have sliders. And the cool thing is you can animate them. And this is also very eye-catching and interesting and nice. It's cool. It's very cool. It becomes alive. But the thing is, you don't see it in normal day-to-day use very often. This changed now because a lot of popular fonts, Google fonts, Open Sans, don't use Open Sans included, is a variable font now. But the size, regarding the size, objective is one typeface I used in a recent project. It's the static font file was 42 kilobytes for one weight.
Is that one weight? Okay.
Yeah, one weight, 42 kilobytes. The character set is pretty extended, and the alternate characters, they are smaller in WAF2 compression. I'm sure you've seen 15 kilobytes and stuff. Yeah, so this is the reason why.
Basically, that's, okay, 42 kilobytes.
Yeah, let's start from 42 kilobytes. I see your heart is bleeding right now, but I know, yeah. Your developers always make such a big thing about these 42 kilobytes because I don't care if they download a 300 kilobyte image every time they reload the page, but the font gets loaded once and it's, let's say, 100 or 200 kilobytes. But this is a problem then. Okay, whatever.
But it flickers. It flickers. That's the. Yeah, I think to be honest, like, you know, I'm not so concerned. I've seen like six megabyte JavaScript bundles, you know. So, you know,
what?
42. Yeah, let's not go there. But you know, I've seen, you know, stuff. But you know, just I think the thing with fonts is that if it's too big and you have low bandwidth, then the font will flicker. So that's why it's so kind of annoying, because you get this annoying, you know, things moving.
Yeah, this
right
reflow.
When you start reading.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Depending on your font stack, I guess. So if you should use typeface with different metric and then use font display swap, and it's not that bad then.
Yeah. The file was 42 kilobytes for objective.
Yes.
Okay. So good.
For objective, and now if you take the variable font, it's 78 kilobytes.
It has all the weights.
And it has all the weights going from, I think, 100 to 900 or something, and everything in between. You could do something crazy like font weight 442 because you can, and you should. Why shouldn't you?
Yeah. So basically, so then the last question, because this sounds super great, is what's the browser support? Can I really use it?
Yes, you definitely can use it. The major browser support is there since 2018. So now we have support for it except for IE11. But who wants to support IE11 anyways? No. And Opera Mini doesn't work on Opera Mini. So
but Opera Mini is basically like it's you know, you really need to be on the market where it's the majority or very popular, because it has so many considerations. But if you don't have a requirement for Internet Explorer 11 support, by the way, I think just maybe last week or something, they finally set the final date for the death of Internet Explorer 11. I think the extended support is also going to die, and we are all going to be like, you know, in a better world with the greenfield browsers. So basically, if you don't have this, which is the case for a lot of developers, because it takes a lot of work in a modern web app to actually support IE11. So it's basically dropped very often. And so that's great. That's actually a very good.
And the good thing about this variable font thing is the support on mobile is great, and you don't have IE11 on mobile, of course. So, and there the benefits are most obvious, since you might be not on a fast connection probably, yeah, or and there you get all these benefits. So variable fonts are definitely one thing to consider, and there are more and more typefaces coming out. It's getting more or less the industry standard. One sad point is that Figma, my beloved design tool, is still not supporting variable fonts, which breaks my heart, and I'm hoping to see them support variable fonts in the future someday.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would imagine that Figma would be the first tool to support them, but hopefully they will do it. Yeah, it's very,
even
really weird.
Sketch, and who's using Sketch? No.
Yeah, it's so 2020 to use Sketch, you know.
It's so 2020, yeah.
Okay, if you need to choose one last technical tip on fonts, what would it be?
Yeah, maybe it would be not to use text-align justify. This is okay. So easy, because it's well supported to text-align justify. Even Opera Mini supports it. But the problem with justified text is non-designers might say, oh, this looks so pretty because the lines on the left and the right, they're straight, it's symmetry, it's beautiful. Look at this great design. It's beautiful. But the problem is not at the edges of your text. The problem lies within. And the spaces between words get very big, or can become very big. I'm not sure about Finnish, but German is a language with enormously long words. And in this case, where you have, if you have a justified text, you get gaps between words, and if you have a narrow column like on a phone, you get gaps between the words that might be bigger than the distance to the next line, which is not beneficial for reading. So you could solve this by hyphenation, but hyphenation, the thing is, it's always a lazy algorithm that does these things, and it's not very evened out. And even in professional desktop publication tools like InDesign, it's hard to get a good looking justified text. So just don't do it. It's not worth the hassle, it's not worth the effort. Hyphenation is, though, so you maybe just activate hyphens auto for your text, but be careful at the language tag there, so otherwise it wouldn't work, because the browser doesn't know for what language it should hyphenate. But just to add hyphenations for body text is beneficial. To use justified text is not.
Okay, then the last question related to typography before we go to your pro tips for, you know, on the resources. Where should you get your web fonts from? Do you have any, you know, recommendations?
Yeah, sure. I basically prefer using fonts from smaller independent foundries. The reason for that is there are a lot of great type foundries out there who do very innovative stuff, like David Jonathan Ross, DJR.com is his domain. He also created a beautiful typeface you might be familiar with. It's called Input. And this is a typeface. This is created just for coders. There's a monospaced version where you can adjust everything as you like it. I'm not sure about you, but some people hate it when the O is slash. They want the dot in the O, and developers get very emotional about their type choices, I guess.
And I'm probably on the weird side where I really don't care, but some people they spend top dollar on getting the font that they really like.
Okay.
Why not Google Fonts? Why not Google Fonts? It's free.
Yeah, that's a good one. Thank you. It's horrible. Yeah, the thing with Google Fonts is overused, definitely, but there's still some myths surrounding this. I'm sure about you with this cross-site caching thing. This might have been true if you say, yeah, I'm just using OpenSense, because if somebody downloaded it once and it's the most, it's truly, besides for next to right after Font Awesome, it's the most popular web font on the Web's Almanac, on the yearly report. It's the most popular web font, OpenSense. And
trying to gain the performance benefit of using Google Fonts, the same URL will be then already in the cache. That's what I
But it won't, because it doesn't. There's no clue for it, or there's no evidence for it. As I recently read in an article, you can link it in the descriptions by Wiki.io, I think it was. And the thing with this cache partitioning is for privacy reasons, because you can't use the cache of another site for the next one for privacy reasons, for tracking things. And also, definitely, Google might be, we don't know, but I guess they do. We don't know what the requests create when you download a Google font. And you still can, you always can download them and convert them to the format you want to use, basically, which should be WAF 2. And if you don't need support for IE11, just use WAF 2.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So then it's time for the last question for today. And it is, what resources, books, blog posts, people to follow, whatever, would you recommend to a front-end developer who wants to go from good to great?
Yeah, regarding typography, there's one guy, I think you're familiar with him, is Zach Leatherman, as I already mentioned. I think he's now more famous for 11T, I think. Didn't he do 11T?
Okay.
But he is the guy that, he did a lot of great talks about web performance and font performance, and I was at the pressure to meet him once when there still were conferences and things. But he's great to follow along about web typography, or let's say font performance. Regarding the issue of typography on the web, there's a book by Richard Rutter which is called Web Typography, and this is just a Bible, because it's, but buy the printed version, because it's beautifully said in a typeface from a foundry in Vienna, and the book is easy to read, nice to read. It's very practical. It summarizes the tips you need as a front-end developer and gives you an understanding of design, but always applied to the web, which we all love, of course. And yeah, this would be a major suggestion for that. And if you really want to dive into typography nerdness, not necessarily related to front-end development, then there's also an even nerdier, and I guess the second YouTube channel on the planet about typography. And this is by typography guru, Ralf Herrmann. He's also a typography, but he's going more into these historic details. And yeah, he's got a very calm and informative style, and very well researched and made videos there as well.
So what was the channel name? Typography?
Typography guru.
Okay, yeah.
Like guru, yeah.
Yeah, and then the second YouTube channel on typography is from Oliver Schoendorfer.
Dorfer, yes, exactly.
And yeah, it is called Pimp My Type. So that's also exactly Something that people should check out.
Yeah,
thank you, Oliver, for joining the show. It was very nice to talk with you about typography on the web. Next time when I get to use fonts, I'm going to propose that we use a variable font. And cool. I also got some very good tips on web typography and typography in general. And thanks to everyone who listened to the show. And we'll see you in a few weeks.